Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. We're going to be talking about history today. My guest is Jim Bedant, and his book is called Democracy's Big Day, the inauguration of our president, 1789 through 2009. Having just gone through one last month, well, we're going to be talking a little bit more about how all of the changes have evolved through the years. Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Donna.
I found your book so informative. I can see why you have been considered the inaugural historian by the major networks throughout the United States, as well as in Canada and the United Kingdom.
There aren't too many of us, that's for sure.
Well, no kidding. I mean, this is really a unique area of interest, and there is so much that has evolved through our 200-year history, 200-plus. Now, you graduated from Northwestern University and Loyola Law School, and you have been an attorney with the Los Angeles County Public Defender's Office since 1978. And you've been written up in all kinds of major publications. You've had all kinds of activities that you've been involved with, but this really has developed into a big, big deal because of the attention to detail. You have worked as a correspondent at the last two inaugurations for MSNBC, both in 2001, and the British network, ITV, in 2005. Jim, this is such a unique hobby, if you will. How in the world did this ever grab your attention?
Well, it's an interesting story, that's for sure, because a lot of people who know me never dreamed that I would write a book about this subject. I'd written some articles over the years. I'd written about sports. I'd written about the law. But I've always been a history buff. And I'd also always sort of wanted to write a book. I had just never quite come up with a unique enough subject. And this was my unique subject, and the way I came about it was because of a hobby of mine, the hobby being collecting sports programs. You go to a game, you buy a program. Well, within my sports program collection, I had a couple of presidential inauguration programs that people had given me. My grandfather went to one years ago, and another friend of mine went to one about 15, 16 years ago. And then when I discovered eBay a number of years ago, one day I typed in the word inauguration, and then all of these old programs came up.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
So I thought, well, that might be sort of fun to get some of these old programs from Franklin D. Roosevelt and even Teddy Roosevelt and John F. Kennedy, whoever, just whoever they happen to be. And I just, at the time, I was thinking about just adding the programs to my program collection. But then when I started acquiring them and reading them, that's when I started learning a lot of history, including some tremendous old stories, great vignettes from the past, and I realized nobody knows this stuff. And if I put this together, it could make for a fun book.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I was amazed at the various points of detail that you were able to bring up. And that's what, you know, that is what makes this so fascinating, because it is very much pomp and circumstance in today's world. And it was to a degree, you know, a couple hundred years ago. But really, a lot of things have evolved. A lot of traditions have evolved, like the poetry reading and some other things. But let's go into some of the topics that you covered. One, right off the bat in your book, you have the chapter titled, Can't We All Get Along? And your statement is, Not all presidents or president-elects have handled themselves with gracious dignity. And that really grabbed my attention. And
yes.
you had a story about President Harry S. Truman and President-elect Dwight D. Eisenhower in 1953. Tell us that story.
Sure. That's that might be really the last time that the old and the new president really didn't get along so well. What happened in 1953 was that the new president, Dwight Eisenhower, was a little miffed. He was a little bit upset and embarrassed because his son John, who had been stationed in Korea during the Korean War, had been taken away from the Korean battle lines and brought to Washington for the inauguration. And that this embarrassed Eisenhower because he felt his son was getting special treatment. And the story is that he supposedly had words with Truman, with the outgoing president, in which Eisenhower said, "I want to know who tried to embarrass me. I want to know who ordered my son be brought in from Korea." To which President Truman is supposed to have said, "It was the President of the United States who ordered your son to be brought in from Korea. It was the President who thought it would be a fine idea for John Eisenhower to get to see his father sworn in as president."
And this really created an agitation.
Well, it did. As we have seen over the last many inaugurations, early in the morning, about an hour and a half before the ceremony begins, the incoming president travels to the White House to meet with the outgoing president, and they have a photo opportunity in front of the White House, and then they go inside and they have coffee for about 20 minutes. That's what happened this year. That's what's happened the last number of inaugurations. But in 1953, Eisenhower arrived at the White House, but didn't get out of his car, didn't go inside into the White House to have that traditional coffee at all. Instead, they just drove to the White House and they had this heated conversation.
You bring up information about the swearing-in ceremony at different inaugurations, and I found some of the details interesting, that the vice president-elect will be called upon to be sworn into office, and he can choose anyone to administer the oath. And I was surprised to find out that an outgoing vice president has historically sworn in his successor.
That used to happen almost routinely. That hasn't been that way for quite a while, but that used to be the way it was almost always done in the 1800s and early 1900s. But more lately, it's been this time Joseph Biden selected one of the Supreme Court justices. He selected Justice Stevens, John Paul Stevens. He's 88 years old. He's probably be retiring before long. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg swore in Al Gore a number of years ago. Sometimes the Speaker of the House has done it. That's Speaker of the House Hastert swore in Dick Cheney. Other times it's been just another senator. It could be almost anybody. But by tradition, of course, for the president, it's the Chief Justice who swears in the president.
You bring up two individuals that when they were sworn in did not use the exact words of the oath. They substituted, and it was Richard Nixon in 1953. He forgot to repeat the word support in part of the vice presidential oath, where he was supposed to promise to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And then Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson also made an error. Rather than saying he'd accept, and this was in 1961, rather than saying he would accept his post without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, what he said, without any mental reservation whatsoever.
Right,
and
whatever. He just said,
whatever.
Without any mental reservation, whatever. That was the vice presidential oath in 1961.
And wow. I thought, isn't it interesting, when you look at the resulting situation with Nixon, and what happened and what evolved with him, I made a note in the margin, not a surprise. I think maybe it was a Freudian slip.
That's a funny way of looking at it. But, of course, that was when he was sworn in as vice president in 1953, and then his major problems, of course, took place when he was president 20 years later.
Yes, that's true. Now, the father of the inauguration, you say, is James Madison. And I didn't have any idea that that was the case. I mean, you really, this is fabulous. I think teachers in high school, you know, that are giving information on history, your book would just be absolutely fascinating to the students. And I think of what we've just gone through in January with the latest inauguration, and I'm sure you're going to have some new goodies to talk about in your next book. But tell us about James Madison.
Well, he's well known as and has been called the father of the Constitution for a long time. But when I was doing my research, I was checking out just about every kind of tidbit as you can imagine, and you've read the book, so you know what I'm talking about. I'm looking for all the traditional things, all of the well-known things, but also a lot of the oddball events, and I was looking for all sorts of details. And one of the details I was looking for was, well, how did the presidential oath come to be written? And I learned that it was written during the Constitutional Convention of 1787, roughly 2 years before George Washington was sworn in as president. And the presidential oath is a part of the Constitution. And the main writers of the section of the Constitution that dealt with the presidential oath were James Madison and George Mason. And I just thought, well, that's really fascinating that James Madison wrote the word to the oath, and then 22 years later, he got to say them himself when he became president.
Isn't it amazing how things work out? It's just absolutely fascinating. Now, what I thought was just absolutely fun was the girl that when Chief Justice William Howard Taft was making a note to Herbert Hoover, there was a little girl that was listening in to the ceremony, and she said, "You did not do it correctly."
Yes. And it wasn't, and wasn't that something, because that turned out to be a little bit of foreshadowing of what happened this year. Because this year, obviously, we all heard Chief Justice John Roberts misstate the presidential oath. Well, this wasn't the first time. It did happen, as you're stating, in 1929. A few days before the ceremony, Chief Justice William Howard Taft, who 20 years earlier was our president, he's the only person ever to be both president and chief justice. So 3 days before the inauguration in 1929, he wrote to the new president-to-be, Herbert Hoover, and told him exactly how the ceremony would go and what words he would say. But then, on Inauguration Day itself, as you were indicating, a little girl named Helen Terwilliger, 13 years old, was sitting in her classroom in New York State. And she was a young girl who had memorized that presidential oath. And when she was listening to the radio on March 4th, 1929, when she heard Chief Justice Taft administer the oath, she was certain that he had made a mistake. She was certain that he had said, "Promise to preserve, maintain, and defend the Constitution," rather than the correct words, "preserve, protect, and defend." And what makes it such a fascinating story is that this little girl wrote to the Chief Justice to tell him that he had made a mistake. And amazingly, he wrote her back. And the media got a hold of this. They became aware that there was this correspondence going on. And the media wanted to know, well, what's the real story here? And to make a long story short, the companies that made sound and newsreels put their films together, checked the sound, and they had a press conference about 10 days after the inauguration to declare that the little girl was right.
What a story. I mean, I just thought that was amazing. And the fact that it was confirmed that she was correct. And this is someone I've never heard about. I've never heard the story about the little girl. And
I learned that story. This is the third volume of my book. I wrote the first one in 2000. The second one in 2004, and this one came out in 2008, so it doesn't include the Barack Obama inauguration. It came out in 08. And I learned that story about the 1929 misstating of the oath only about a week or so before my book's deadline.
Oh, my heavens.
I learned about it. It's not in the first two volumes. I learned about it, and I said, whoa, I've got to whip this story out. I've got to get this into this new edition because this story is great. And so I really did enjoy learning about that. I learned the details about it from a number of people who work at the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library in the state of Iowa. And they supplied me with many details, many direct quotes, the letter that I quote in the book, and a few newspaper articles as well.
You bring up facts about the Bible that sometimes has been used and other times hasn't been, and there have been different items used for the swearing-in and ceremonies. Let's cover that a little bit.
Sure. Well, a Bible is normally used at an inauguration, but it certainly doesn't have to be. Well, most of these things are a tradition, as we've been talking about. There was one president who purposely did not use a Bible, and that was John Quincy Adams in 1825. He placed his hand upon a book of laws instead. And he was a very religious person, but he was almost taking literally the fact that when the president takes the oath, the president is promising to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. So that's what he did. There have been other times where a Bible wasn't present in the room or it wasn't used. Even this time, as we saw, Barack Obama used Abraham Lincoln's Bible for the public ceremony on January 20th. But then when we had that redo the next day because of the slight miswording of the oath, on the 20th, a redo which really wasn't necessary, but they went ahead and did it anyway. He didn't use a Bible for that second swearing in the map room of the White House on January 21st.
Mm-hmm. And then there was the George Washington Bible, and there was one election where they wouldn't allow it to be used because the weather was so bad. They said, we're not going to allow this Bible because it's a national treasure.
Yes, when inauguration.
That
George Washington 1789 Bible has actually been used at four subsequent inaugurations. And George W. Bush hoped to be the fifth president to use it after George Washington in 2001. The Bible is normally stored at the Masonic Temple in New York City, and it was brought down to Washington, brought down by train, and it was ready to be used in 2001. It was inside of the Capitol. It was ready to go. But pretty much at the last minute, they decided not to use it because of the weather conditions. There was sleet and snow. It was just a miserable day in Washington in 2001, as it actually often is in Washington around inauguration time. But it was particularly a difficult situation. And because of the fragile condition of the old book, the keepers of that particular Bible, who are from New York, made it very clear that that Bible cannot be exposed to the elements and it shall not be used. So it remained inside the Capitol that day, and George W. Bush used a family Bible instead.
Now, Lyndon B. Johnson broke with tradition when he had his wife, Lady Bird, hold the Bible during his swearing in. Wasn't that the first time a woman was included in an inauguration ceremony?
It was. We take it for granted now that the First Lady holds the Bible at an inauguration. But you're right, 1965 was the very first time. She set a precedent. It's been done ever since then, but never before then. At the previous planned inauguration, for example, 1961, that was John F. Kennedy's inauguration. Jacqueline Kennedy was there, but she didn't participate in the ceremony in that way. She was just off to the side. The Bible was held by a clerk from the United States Supreme Court named James Browning.
You bring up also a point of history regarding Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, because in 1951, Congress passed the 22nd Amendment to the United States Constitution, not allowing someone to run more than twice. And he had gone into number three.
He actually went to number four.
Oh, yes, he was starting number four. He was very, very ill, though. Very, very ill.
He was inaugurated four times.
Mm-hmm.
No one else is ever going to match that. That can't be done again.
Right.
Well, you know, actually, technically, there is a way in which it can be done again, because every time somebody is sworn in, it is an inauguration. So you could actually say that Barack Obama has already had two. He was sworn in twice.
Mm-hmm.
And in the year 2013, our next planned inauguration, mm-hmm. Inauguration Day happens to fall on a Sunday. And whenever it falls on a Sunday, they have a private ceremony on Sunday, and then a public ceremony on Monday the 21st. So, if Barack Obama is reelected in 2012, he will have two more inaugurations on back-to-back days once again. So you could say he will have had four. But it's a very different type of four swearings in than Franklin D. Roosevelt, obviously, who was elected four separate times, 1932, 36, 40, and 1944.
There were some interesting points, too, that you had where there were presidents just for one day.
Well, that's sort of a legend. It's sort of a fun way to tell the story. I was just mentioning the fact that now when Inauguration Day falls on a Sunday, there's a private ceremony on Sunday and then the public one on Monday. And that's the way it's been that was the way it was in 1917, 1957, 1985, and then we expect that to be the case also in 2013. But the first two times in our nation's history when Inauguration Day fell on a Sunday, they did not have a private ceremony on Sunday. They didn't have anything. And some historians believe that it would have been the president pro tem of the Senate who would have technically been the acting president for that one day, for the Sunday when no one was sworn in. And in fact, the president pro tem of the Senate in 1849 was a man named David Rice Acheson. And on his gravestone are the words, President of the United States, one day.
Fascinating stuff. I don't think that most people are aware of these unique factors that are in history. That's what made your book such interesting reading. But also, you had a section about Abraham Lincoln. And of course, President's Day is coming up. But Abraham Lincoln, you gave out 2 points that when in 1865... And this just was mind-boggling. It's estimated that he shook hands with 6,000 people in just 3 hours. I mean, that is just an unbelievable number when you think of someone shaking hands, just one right after the other. Also, with Lincoln, it was the first time in history when a president of the United States greeted and sought the opinion of a free black man inside the White House. Tell us what happened.
Back in those days, the inaugural parade, which we now always know takes place in the afternoon following the ceremony and luncheon. But back in the early days, the parade actually took place before the ceremony. The first time there was a parade was in 1809, and it continued to be before the ceremony up until the latter part of the 1800s. And what they would do in those days in the afternoon was have a reception at the White House instead. And there was a very famous reception at the White House involving Andrew Jackson when people trampled the place. But
a disaster.
That's right. But the one we're talking about now took place in 1865, and the famous civil rights pioneer Frederick Douglass attended that particular inauguration, and he came to the White House during the afternoon as one of the people who shook hands with President Lincoln. And when he arrived there, there were some people who didn't even want to let Frederick Douglass inside, but Lincoln insisted, And Lincoln told those around him, here comes my friend Douglas. And Lincoln told Frederick Douglass that he was happy to see him and that he had seen him in the crowd today listening to the inaugural address. And Lincoln told Douglass that he valued Douglass's opinion and wanted to know what Douglass had thought of his inaugural address, and it was a very famous speech in which Lincoln said, with malice toward none, with charity for all. Mm-hmm. And Douglass said to Abraham Lincoln, it was a sacred effort. And the president responded, I'm glad you liked it. And there are a lot of people around who remembered that conversation and wrote about that.
Quite a significant event considering the times. Three times in the 36 years between 1865 and 1901, a president has been shot to death by an assassin. On April 14, 1865, President Abraham Lincoln. July 2, 1881, James A. Garfield. September 6, 1901, President William McKinley. These, and then of course we have John F. Kennedy on November 22, 1963. These are points of history that created such shifts and such changes. With each of those assassinations, they had a particular impact. Which one stood out the most to you? Not that they all weren't serious, but which one do you think had the most significant impact nationwide?
I would think that Abraham Lincoln's had a huge impact because he had been president throughout the Civil War. And then so many of us actually remember John F. Kennedy's assassination, which mm-hmm. was so shocking. I mean, I was 15 years old when that took place, and I had read about those ones that had been much earlier in our history, and they just seemed like that, ancient history. It sure didn't seem to most of us growing up in the 1950s and early 1960s that anything like that could ever happen again in our more civilized society. So it was so shocking. And really began the, you know, a certain era of where people were more fearful and more concerned about security. In fact, the first real security as we now know it at presidential inaugurations began with Lyndon Johnson in 1965, as he had a bulletproof car and a bulletproof mm-hmm. Reviewing stand. Bulletproof glass around the reviewing stand during the inaugural parade. So, you know, those events are certainly hard to forget.
Yes, they are. And, of course, the absolutely infamous Andrew Johnson, after Lincoln was assassinated, was put into place, and he was just a horrific disaster because when he did his vice presidential speech in 1865, I mean, he had been drunk. And then he was brought into office after Lincoln had been shot, and he was a mess.
Yeah, well, to his credit, I think, although, yes, he was drunk when he was sworn in as vice president, but to his credit, I think we should say that it wasn't because he was celebrating. Rather, medicine back then wasn't quite the same as it is now, and he wasn't feeling well on the day that he became vice president, and some folks suggested to him, why don't you just drink some whiskey to take care of your ailment? And so he did. And back then, unlike now, the vice president used to give an inaugural address, just as the president does. And so when he got up there after been drinking his whiskey for his ailment, he definitely was drunk. He was rambling incoherently. People were holding their heads in embarrassment. Nobody could understand a word that he was saying. It was considered to be a very embarrassing situation back then.
Well, you have so many fascinating points of detail that in a million years I would have never even imagined. And I'm so grateful that you have this delightful hobby, because with every one of your books you bring out more information. It's just absolutely great. Democracy's Big Day, the inauguration of our president from 1789 to 2009, Now, Obama's is not in this book, but I know it'll be in the next one.
It will be. That title was given just to preview the upcoming 2009 inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I'm already starting to work on the next one, and so it should be out certainly in time for the next inauguration.
Oh, just absolutely fabulous. Jim, what is your website? So the people, if they wanted to share this, you know, some of my listeners have kids, or maybe there's college students even listening, they would just love to have something unique to bring into conversation regarding American history. And your book is fascinating. So is there a website they can go to?
Yes, there is. It's inaugurationbook.com. That's easy enough, www.inaugurationbook.com. And I've talked to a lot of schools. I even spoke to a school this morning. I'm doing it again next week, and I've got a couple more coming up, which surprised me because I did a number of them before the inauguration, but I'm even finding some schools interested in still having me talk even after this inauguration is over. So, you know, I hope people take a look at the website. The book is on available through Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com and so on also.
Jim, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Donna. I've really enjoyed it.
So have I. This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget, go to inaugurationbook.com. Fascinating facts that there's even more than what we've discussed. It's really interesting history. We're going to be back in just a moment. Telephone lines will be open, so don't go away. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Join us at the 7th Annual Conscious Life Expo Conference and Film Festival, February 13th through 16th at the LAX Hilton, 5711 West Century Boulevard, Los Angeles. We are bringing together cutting-edge speakers including David Icke, Sonia Hoquette, celebrity and musician David Carradine, Danyon Brinkley, George Norrie, Sean David Morton, Vashali, and many more. Visit www.consciouslifeexpo.com. or call the box office 800-367-5777 for discounted tickets.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in Physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sivo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Pete Smith here with OrthoTab Health Shoes. These funky-looking shoes, invented by a medical doctor, will make you feel better. Who has time to work out these days? Wear our sandals or clogs around the house, go shopping, wear them on the treadmill. You'll burn extra calories, you'll tone and trim the legs, thighs, lower abdomen, rear end, your love handle area. You'll simply feel better. Check them out on the web at orthotebb.net.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Hey, telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the telephone numbers to call in to. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And from anywhere in the world, you can call in to 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. 9756. Now, if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or initial. Trust me, it's painless, and it can be a lot of fun. So just give me a call, because when you call in, I get your first name or initial. Of course, I love to know where you're calling in from. After that, then let me do what I do so well. I'm an information resource, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. So again, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. Also, I just want to mention that if there are any listeners in the Los Angeles area, you're hearing the comments about the Conscious Life Expo, I will be giving a talk at 7 o'clock in the evening on Friday the 13th. Isn't that a cold date? And I'll be talking about mind power, and I'm going to be at the expo that 13th, 14th, and 15th, my booth number will be 537, and I will be available for many consultations. So come on by and say hello. I'd love to meet you. Also, if you know of someone that might enjoy being an assistant, I am going to need some assistance while I'm down in California. Just give me a call at my office, 800-872-8852. Well, I thought I'd share some information with you about some technology that has gone on, and this it's just numbers. Sometimes I am just amazed at the sum of information that we have accessible or available to us. Do you know there are 845,000 dams in the United States? I didn't know that there were that many. No, actually, it's not the United States. It's in the world. I have to correct myself. It's 845,000 dams in the world. Now, here in the United States, we have 80,000 of that, with a total storage capacity of 48 trillion cubic feet of water in our Hoover Dam, which is right there on the Nevada-Arizona border at Lake Mead, is our largest one here in the U.S., and it stores 1.2 billion cubic feet. Now, some other details regarding dams. 49 failures in the United States of dams between 2000 and 2007. Why overtopping due to poor design accounts for about 34% of the failures, and some 85% of all large dams will have passed their projected lifespans by 2020. You know, concrete has a very strong life patterning for a good 100 years. And from what I've been told, and if there are any of you that are engineers listening to this, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like after 100 years, concrete has a patterning where it can deteriorate. Although I'll tell you, they still haven't figured out what was put into the concrete in Rome, because 2,000 years later, there are areas of concrete in Rome itself that are so strong, so durable, they are just almost like new. It's been amazing. I'd love to figure out what the magic was. They still haven't been able to figure that one out. Now, the Association of State Dam Safety Officials estimate that it would cost $10.1 billion, $10.1 billion to repair the dams most in need of rehabilitation. That's a lot of money. Now, the final cost of a Three Gorges Dam in China is $25 billion, and most of us have seen pictures of this dam that is a phenomenal size. It's going to be considered the world's largest. It holds back more than 1.4 billion cubic feet of water, and of course, to build this dam, it's displaced at least 1.3 million people, 13 cities, 140 towns, and 1,350 villages have been intentionally flooded. Now, this, when it's all done, it's 410 miles long. It's going to generate 84.7 billion kilowatt hours of electricity a year. That's the energy equivalent of 50 million tons of coal. Now, there's a lot of things we're aware of today that we just didn't have any clue about when a lot of the dams were constructed. Apparently, 65% of ocean-bound fresh water is obstructed by many dams that have been built through the years, and more than half of the world's 292 large river systems are very negatively affected by dams. Water development, including the dams, has harmed at least 91% of endangered fish species and 22% of endangered birds in the United States. Now, Bioscience has been the researcher on this, and that's their finding. Now, there's 250 billion kilowatt hours of U.S. hydropower production, and this was for last year, which represents 6% of the U.S.'s total electrical supply. And the states of Washington, Oregon, and California are the top hydroelectric producers in the U.S. And worldwide, 19% of electricity comes from hydropower. And the countries that are very much involved, Canada, of course, the United States, and also Brazil. Generating energy is really, really one of the big upcoming industries on a whole different level, whether it's through solar, whether it is through wind, whether it's through water. We are becoming more innovative, and we're also more consciously aware of the things that are positive and negative with what we do. How has this come about? Well, we've had to be on a learning curve. And so today, because we're able to check out all of these various statistics like I just shared with you, it enables us as a people globally to be able to look at things with a clearer eye. And in many, many ways, it has created opportunity for farms and for irrigation that wasn't available at the time these dams were built. But now we're looking at ways that are going to be more, if you will call it, environmentally friendly, and friendly to the many creatures that we share this planet with. We're learning how to think differently. And I just say hats off to those that are coming up that are resourceful and innovative, because, again, we're going to learn from our mistakes, I hope, and be able to move forward, because I don't think any of us want to be without electricity. Look at all the things. Just check through in your day's activities about what it is that you will not enjoy if you don't have electricity. I, for one, don't want to go back to Renaissance. Thank you very much. I've had a period in my life where I've been there, done that. It's not fun. So it's okay to dress up in old-time costuming, but we don't want to live the way that they did then. And this is something, again, it's going to take some very creative, resourceful people, and they're out there working right now to make things happen. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Or worldwide, 888-815-9756. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, I've got some wonderful information to share with you. Also, I'll tell you about our guest coming up next week. This is Donna Sebo. I'll be back in just a moment.
This is Pete Smith for OrthoTeb Health Shoes. OrthoTebs are completely heelless, invented by a doctor, and you'll burn 3 times the calories of regular walking in our sandals, 2 times the calories of regular walking in our clogs. They help you tone and trim the entire leg, thighs, buns, lower abs, and love handle area. They offer symptom improvement for people with plantar fasciitis and low back pain. Check them out on the web at www.orthoteb.net.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Interested in UFOs, the paranormal, predictions, prophecies, and psychics? Then join us along with David Icke, Sean David Morton, Jim Mars, Richard Hoagland, Danyon Brinkley, Sonia Coquette, and many more at the 7th Annual Conscious Life Expo and Film Festival, February 13th to 16th at the LAX Hilton. Call the box office at 1-800-367-5777 or visit ConsciousLifeExpo.com for more information and discounted tickets.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. Now, here's the lineup for guests for next week. We're going to be talking about tea and taste. We'll be going to England and talking with Tanya Buckrell. Oh, there's so much wonderful history about tea, but she's going to give us a lot more than that. We're going to learn how to prepare tea and all kinds of good things. And then on Tuesday, just in time for Valentine's Day, we're going to be talking chocolate. Yes, Jim Walsh is going to be my guest. He will be online from Mexico. And so we're going to be talking about food, yes, chocolate, that people of Mexico were very much acquainted with long before the Westerners became acquainted with it. And then, in keeping with this marvelous holiday coming up, Valentine's Day, Bob Brenner is going to be my guest. We're going to be discussing the art associated with Valentine's Day, the cards that so many of us send around. Today, we are using email cards many times, but there's all of this wonderful information, so Bob's going to be sharing that with us. Then on the 12th, which is Lincoln's birthday, we're going to be talking about the Lincoln family, This is an absolutely amazing story about the last Lincolns. Yes. So we'll be discussing this with Charles Lockman, and then on Friday I'm going to be at the Los Angeles Conscious Life Expo. We'll be playing Eric Pearl's program. He is one of the speakers there, so we're going to be playing that on Friday, as I will be very much involved with the activities of the event. So Best of Donna will be on Friday. Now, whenever you want to know about who's coming up or what's coming up on the Donna Sebo Show, just go to the listing at bbsradio.com. You can also check out my website, delphiinternational.com, and you can go into the calendar listing and for authors, and you'll find more about that. Also, apparently, we're going to be putting together a blog, so there will be information about some of the authors that are going to be coming up. So I'll let you know when that starts happening. Now, again, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. If you ever doubt that one person can make a difference, all you have to do is read about people who decide that something is significant and they want to take on a task that maybe other people will be intimidated by, they don't have the time to deal with, but for some reason that individual will have a passion for what they want to do. And this is what happened with a woman by the name of Deborah Nysmith. She says she's got a motto. It's all about the horses. Now, she has a ranch that she develops in 2002 in Joshua, Texas. It's called the Passion Horse Ranch. And her story, I just couldn't pass up because it is absolutely amazing. She has rescued more than 30 foals of so-called Premarin horses. Now, I have never heard this before. Premarin horses, she saved them from slaughter, and she gives them open space and the love and care that they really, really need. Now, this is how she got involved with this. Foals are born to mares, so the mares are kept continually pregnant. The urine is very, very rich with hormones, and that's what's collected and used to make Premarin. Yes, ladies, it comes from horses' urine. Now, this is a drug that has been given to women for a lot of years to help them through menopause. And the foals usually end up being auctioned and killed for food in Europe and Asia. I didn't know anything about that. And thousands of foals face slaughter each year. And of course, Deborah can only help a few. But whenever she hears about a horse that needs help, she buys it and ships it to her own ranch. She'll spend anywhere from $500 a horse up to $1,500 for a horse. And she has 40 volunteers that take over the care of this animal when it comes in and also helps to train it. And she said these animals learn to be around people, so they're ready to be given, you know, to sold to other people that have farms. Now, she is very particular about who she lets adopt one of her horses. She said, I'm not afraid of taking anybody on. She's 6 foot tall. So she said, I don't put up with any weirdos. She just doesn't tolerate that. She watches how the horses and the people that are interested in buying them interact. And she also goes and visits wherever these animals are going to possibly have the home. She doesn't assume anything. And she said, I've been in love with horses ever since I was just a kid. And in 2006, she quit her job at a software company in California and decided she would move to Texas, bought 4 acres south of Fort Worth, Texas. And once people found out about her rescuing of these beautiful, beautiful animals, she said she's just had all kinds of supportive response. And she said, when horses and humans have a special connection, and I can find these animals a home, that means a lot to me. You never know when you're going to become educated about something. And this was something that, for me, this story really touched my heart and my mind, and I wanted to share it with you because I thought it might have the same effect on you. You just never know how you're going to be able to help. Now, Deborah can't rescue all of the horses, but she can rescue those that she's capable of taking care of, and that's what she does. And there's a lot of people supporting her, making sure that she's going to be able to do this. So it's a wonderful thing, and we need to remember that whatever we have a passion for, there may be a place or a space in some way that we can bring that point of service so that it can be out there doing the job that needs to be done. So anyway, I wanted to compliment her and to just say this is just absolutely wonderful, and I think it's great that she's able to do this. Now, again, got a great lineup next week, and don't forget that I'm going to be at the Conscious Life Expo next week, and I'll be there the 13th, the 14th, and the 15th, and on the 13th, I'm going to be giving a talk about mind power, and that's going to be at 7 o'clock in the evening, so if you're in the California area, hey, stop by my booth at 537, because I'll be doing many consultations with anybody who might be interested, no appointment necessary while I am there. I have to chuckle. I know we're going to be closing out in just a little bit of time. There was a woman by the name of Jean Mueller. She said a case manager at her mental health facility sought a reference for a patient who was looking for a job. And someone piped up, "I'll vouch for him." And this was another patient. They said, "We were roommates in prison." Mm-hmm. Yes. Very good point. Well, I don't know if that letter of reference would have a very, very good positioning. By the way, I had someone say to me, "Donna, I really like the information about the apprentice program that you spoke about yesterday, so I want to say don't ever be afraid of changing your mind. If you're one of those people that has gone through a loss with a job, reach out, because there are so many opportunities out there. We're in this tremendous cycle of change in the world that we're experiencing at this time. It's not just here in the United States. It's around the world. So just know you're going to have opportunities. Remember, sometimes when things seem to be the darkest, that's really when the light can shine the brightest. That's really when opportunity can be stepped up to and a whole new adventure begins. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. There's a genius inside of you that is willing to just stand up and be counted. Don't be afraid to let that genius within you to have a chance to grow and to be the best it can be. After all, that's what you're here for, to let your light shine and to be that light that is going to maybe open up a path for somebody else so they can see their way too. This is Donna Sebo. We'll see you back here on BBS Radio Station 1, The Donna Sebo Show, Monday, same time, same place. Have a wonderful weekend. Be safe, enjoy, and more than anything else, be good to yourself. This is Donna Sebo. Talk to you on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.